Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Quizmaster Lee. Mark Davis, still on vacation. So this week I'm joined by two prolific and wonderful people in Southwest Florida's art scene, Angela Page and Frankie Colt. They both have their own bands, The Young Dead and Cobras, respectively. They're also supreme event organizers. Angela founded Love Your Rebellion's annual Babe Fest, drawing talent and attendees far and wide. And Frankie had a string of mini music and arts festivals last year at Point of Bell Brewing and Beach Records here in Fort Myers, among other events. Thanks for coming on the No-No, you two.
Oh, thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Great, great. Lately, you guys have teamed up for the Talking Tough podcast and other related tough events. You want to tell our listeners a little about those?
Sure. Frankie and I just wanted to do a live stream, basically. We felt like we wanted to give our audiences a more personal view of ourselves and also have a lot of fun with each other, you know, just something that was creative and, I don't know, gave us an opportunity to hang out and talk to people and engage. So that's where the live stream came from, I think, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're both so, like you said, like involved in the community and stuff. And it was like, what's something that we can do, you know, to promote everyone? It was like, oh, right. Well, this is great. So
yeah. You do a lot of community engagement. I saw you recently posed a question like, how is your social persona different from your real life persona?
Yeah.
And did you guys get a lot of interaction on that?
We got a few bits of interaction, you know, cool. A few really good comments. Yeah. And Frankie and I just always like to mull over the topics. A lot of times we pick them based on stuff that's going on in our own lives or in our minds at that time.
Yeah.
What we've been thinking about. So that's something that we were thinking about as we're getting deeper into this live stream world and, you know, just kind of thinking about what kind of image we portray, you know?
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, I really like the new setup that you have over at DOS Co-op.
Thank you.
Is Spencer helping you with that on the technical aspect?
Yes.
He's awesome.
He's the most wonderful.
Yeah.
He's so talented.
Duke Stamina.
And it's really fun to have a producer. Yeah. Like, he gets to, you know, interact with us, and he's so silly, so we have such a great time together.
Just, yelling stuff from off camera that we respond to.
Yeah, he's awesome. Nice. Yeah.
And also, just DOS is so beautiful, and we are so grateful, you know, to be working with David and Xavier. Like, they're just the fact that they wanted us to be a part of it and that we get to work with more people in the community is really incredible.
Cool. Well, check out Talking Tough on Facebook, the live streams. Those are on usually both your profile pages.
Yes.
Yeah.
So check that out. And this is a trivia podcast, though. So I do have to ask, what are your guys' experience with trivia generally? How do you enjoy trivia?
I actually really like trivia. I like history, specifically historical stories and things like that. I definitely watched Jeopardy a lot growing up. Me and my mom, that was a big thing. I was always the one that wanted to play Trivial Pursuit over Monopoly. So not to say that I'm good at it, just that I like it.
That's a tough game for a kid too, Trivial Pursuit.
Yes.
But I think there's an exhilaration in like learning a lot of stuff.
Definitely.
Rapid fire.
And it's just these little facts, little tidbits.
I don't do trivia a lot, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is going to be a cool first time experience. I mean, have you ever played bar trivia?
Well, I've watched like Jeopardy, and yelled at my TV,
right?
Like, screaming at it, you know. But that's pretty much it. So,
how about the apps? Have you guys ever done like a Trivia Crack or HQ? Is the newer popular one?
No, but now you make me want to go look that up.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know there were a lot of apps for trivia, so that kind of sounds fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Trivia Crack kind of borrows from the Trivial Pursuit style, where you collect you collect trophies, and it's more of a one-on-one game. And HQ is basically like multiple choice Jeopardy that you play along with. And they're doing some interesting things with technology. They have like an on-screen host that's talking to you directly. It's like in a vertical format. It's pretty cool. I would recommend
Interesting.
It.
Interesting. I will check that out.
Yeah. I would say I draw some inspiration from the host dynamic from HQ for my live trivia events, just because I feel like they do a really good job of selecting funny people that can also manage a game well. You know, which is important for trivia. And if you want to play No Nonsense Trivia live this week, you have a few opportunities to do so. First, Monday, May 13th at Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers at 7:30 p.m. The final category for that will once again be U.S. history, once again courtesy of Duffy the Delivery Guy. Wednesday, May 15th will be at Bury Me Brewing Company at 7 p.m. The final category that night will be finance, which was selected by this week's last place contestant, Professor Smartass. So you selected that. And Thursday, May 16th, we'll be at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more information about that and all of our live events online at nononsensetrivia.com. All of the No Nonsense events are free to play. You can win prizes after every round. Join us, won't you? All right. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back in round one for trivia. We're going to get started here with some trivia. Frankie just got a giggle fit going here. You good?
Yep.
Okay, good. Okay, so the first question that I have to do... Oh, I should also mention we're joined now by Kyle Ann.
Hi.
As well. My partner and a wonderful singer-songwriter, Kyle Ann. Do you remember what episode number you were on last time?
I don't.
She's in our guest section. Go to our guest section. You can listen to her previous episode. The first question I have for you guys is a question of entomology, which is the study... of bugs. And Kyle, I think you know this one.
I think I do too.
You're excluded from answering this, but we can talk about it. So Frankie and Angela, Plesia nirtica are bugs that are found mostly in tandem along the Gulf Coast in the southeastern United States and are more commonly known by what name?
Love bugs.
That's right. That's right. I did believe that there was an urban legend that love bugs were created by the University of Florida in order to eat mosquitoes.
I actually heard that too.
But the other day I was looking this up and that's totally bullshit. They're like a naturally occurring creature. They might have been, this is what I meant to research for this question. I think they might have been altered, you know, to have like more of a taste or to try and like, you know, mutate towards mosquito eating. But they were not invented by the University of Florida. That is a popular urban legend that I believed for a while. And I told it to somebody the other day and they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, really? And I'm like, gee, you know, I don't know.
So. They're all over my car right now.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's, you know, you guys are, as we've said, two Southwest Florida individuals. That's definitely a Southwest Florida Gulf Coast style question.
And the key word is attached, like they come in twos.
Yeah, tandem.
They're
attached to That's the why they're called love bugs. Yeah, because it looks like they're fucking.
Attached at the butt.
Ooh, right? Maybe. Kyle, you wanted to hop in and ask a music-related question, right?
I did, and I thought this would be a great question for Frankie and Angela. And I was actually going to include it on one of the trivia nights that I was writing questions for. But
yeah, Kyle's been a huge help writing some questions, trivia questions lately too. It's fun things that couples do, you know, write trivia.
These fun things that we do. No, actually, it is fun. But yeah, so I thought it was too hard. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll keep this for myself. Okay. So I thought this was a really cool question.
But now you're going to unleash it on us.
I'm going to unleash it.
And I'm
going to
play because I don't remember.
Okay, good.
But if I get it right, you'll be suspicious. But whatever.
I will be suspicious. Yeah. You know. All right. So in the 90s, Canadian indie rock musician Feist was roommates with which electropunk musician? They were often collaborators as well, but they were roommates and very good friends.
Oh, I remember it now.
So
I remember
don't
you telling me. Yep. Sorry. Sorry, guys. Can't help.
That is hard and easy at the same time. I'm trying to think and I can't place it. Didn't they just start playing again?
I think so.
Feist. And is it her bandmate in that band?
I don't think they were in a band together.
Okay. So then I don't know.
It'd be a lot cooler if they were.
Right? That would be dope. I would see that band.
Joe Punk.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That is the big clue.
Yeah, I know.
I can't spoil
it,
but that is the big clue right there. Electropunk artist.
And I'm sure when I hear it, I'm going to be like, meh.
Are we allowed to ask for hints? I've never done
this.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it's a male or a female.
It is a female.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay to have some hints.
Okay.
Totally. Totally okay. Because somebody out there is listening going, I know this.
I'm sure.
And somebody needs a hint.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Do we have an expiration clock?
No. Take your time. You know, sometimes the episode is edited down a little bit just for the sake of time, but you can take your time.
And electropunk. This is hard.
Feist was even prominently featured in one of her music videos, licking a bike tire.
That's a good clue, and I still don't know. I'm very disappointed in myself.
This musician had a song featured on the Lost in Translation soundtrack.
Yes, and also Jackass the movie.
I did not know that. I did not know that.
Lost in Translation. I don't know, guys. I'm sorry. I'm flaking.
You're
out
gonna
on
kick
this.
Yourself.
You're gonna kick.
I probably am.
Yeah, it's Peaches.
You know what? I had it in my head, and I was like, "Is it Peaches?" And I was like, "No, don't sound like a dummy and
say Peaches,
that."
Yeah.
Damn it!
I've done that so many times on this podcast.
Damn it! Yeah. I should have said it.
I love Peaches, but I wouldn't have guessed that. Damn.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Cool roommates, right?
Neither would I.
I seriously.
I read that and I was like, "That's amazing."
Should have said it.
All right, here's my next question for you guys. We did entomology first. Now we're going to do etymology, the origin of words and phrases. What phrase, which originated in the circus, describes someone who is the opposite of a jack of all trades? This is a phrase that originated in the circus and describes the opposite of someone who is a jack of all trades.
Okay, so a jack of all trades is somebody who is good at everything but not a master of anything. So it would have to be someone who is a specialist of some kind. That's the opposite, right? I mean, but yeah. That's not the word you're looking for, but that's
no.
The concept.
Yes, that's the concept. Okay. And I'll tell you that the circus origin does not involve a human being as the subject of the phrase. So a lot of teams wrote down master of none, because that's the common expression, jack of all trades, master, and then the
finishes.
Master of none. Yep. But this is a different phrase than that.
Right. Yeah. It's the opposite concept. Mm-hmm. So some type of specialist. Okay. This is going to be, man, it's going to kill me too.
Any ideas, Kyle? Frankie?
I'm trying to think of animal related phrases that imply, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to help you along with one final hint here.
Yeah, please do.
This is a quote from the biodiversitylibrary.org. The history of modern circus is deeply rooted in horsemanship. That's your hint. It's horse related.
That's hard.
Horses in the circus.
Horses in the circus.
Is this something to do with like a quarter horse? I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
No. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't either. I just
one quarter of a horse. Why not the whole horse?
Just a quarter
Give
of it.
Me half
we
a horse,
just want
least.
A quarter of it.
All right. The answer is a one-trick pony.
One-trick
pony, as in, hey,
can only
horse.
Do one thing.
How many legs does this chair have, horse? Clip clop, clip clop. That's the trick he knows, you know.
Right.
So, the history of the modern circus is deeply rooted in horsemanship. The first modern circuses, which took place during the 18th century, were primarily demonstrations of tricks performed on a horse. First by former soldiers who learned such skills during military training, and later by talented men and women trained from a young age to accomplish acrobatics and other feats atop a horse. In order to teach horses to perform tricks for the circus amphitheater, horsemen relied upon instruction from mentors and in books such as Dr. Sutherland's System of Educating the Horse, with rules for teaching the horse some 40 different tricks or feats. So ideally, your horse would know 40 tricks. So a one-trick pony would not be sufficient.
Right.
Not a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. All right, Frankie, what do you got? You got a question?
Yeah, sure.
Lay it on us.
Let's see. A famous actress in the 90s known for shoplifting.
Winona Ryder.
Yes, that's right.
When I found that out, I was like, really? Like, mm-hmm. She stole, I think, like, $5,000 worth of stuff. I was like, what?
She also cut a lot
of
it
move.
With
weird flex,
scissors.
Weird flex.
Yeah.
She, like, went into stores and just cut the clothes with scissors, mm-hmm. which I also thought, that was, like, my favorite part of that story. She was just like, fuck this shirt, fuck these pants.
Exactly.
So strange, though. I mean, what do you think? Do you think she's just looking back on that and being like, oh, my crazy days?
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody's got a little bit of something going on inside them. Everybody expresses it differently.
It's just, it's
sometimes
you gotta strange.
Fuck up some capitalist pants,
right?
You know,
I guess it's just strange, like at her stage in her career at that time, you know, it's not like she was like Justin Bieber getting into the game, you know, she'd been established a little bit, you know. But
isn't that usually when the breakdowns happen, though? Like, think about Britney.
Mm-hmm.
Shave head.
Yeah.
Like, she was already, like...
Do you think this was a breakdown? This one in a writer thing?
I think that it was probably part of some sort of...
Something going on.
Rock bottom situation. Gotcha. I don't think a healthy person goes in and, like, cuts up a bunch of designer clothes.
You're probably right.
Unless they're making a political statement and they specifically are like, I did this for whatever political reasons or social reasons, you know?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if it was like a targeted, like, against the store, you know, like, I want to fuck over this store in particular or something like that. Or maybe it was, you know, but
I still like the fuck these who pants. Knows?
Who knows? This shirt. It's a bullshit shirt.
This shirt ugly.
Maybe somebody should ask her.
I'm
about
gonna
that.
Make it worse.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. She'd be like, why are you bringing that shit up?
I know.
You know, go ask Mel Gibson shit.
yeah, right?
All right. Let's see here. My third question for you guys is an art history question. Fluxus, an international art movement in the 1960s, 1970s, which emphasized the making of the art over the finished product itself, involved what Japanese-American artist, among others? What Japanese-American artist is closely related with the Fluxus movement of the 1960s and 1970s, a movement that emphasized the art making over the final product?
Goodness. Anybody an art history person?
I actually know this.
I got in between a minor and nothing at all in art history. I basically had to get a BS degree, a Bachelor of Science degree, and they said, well, I was going for a Bachelor of Arts degree, and they were like, you don't have enough foreign language classes. And I was like, I haven't taken foreign language class in like 3 years. I'm not going to remember it. And they're like, well, you can get a whole new degree over here. You just have to take 4 extra art history classes. And I was like, okay.
Nice. I'm not
a D in art history.
I did not. I never actually took an art history course. Mm. Only in photography.
Well, I'll tell you. You know, this artist
you learn
probably
a lot about columns.
This artist exists within the general realm of pop culture, I would say.
I'm sure. Is it Yoko Ono?
Yes, it is Yoko Ono.
Oh my God. Really? Yes. I wish I would have said that because I was thinking it and I'm like, don't be stupid. So, don't do it.
Yeah, sometimes you guys just got to suss it out with each other. You know, if you're thinking that, you got to say, Angela, Kyle, what about Yoko Ono? And then Angela says, that's what I was thinking too. The sussing must commence.
Okay.
You know,
yeah. Right. Even if it sounds stupid, she sometimes just, like, I'll just be like,
I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe it's this.
But just a little bit more about the Fluxus, her relationship with the Fluxus movement. One example of her emphasizing the process involved an event where Ono would dance and ask the audience to create paintings in their mind based on her dance. So she was really interested in involving the viewer. Another work during this period focused on, let's see here. One example would be her Yes painting, where the viewer would be invited to climb a ladder towards a magnifying glass that's hung from the ceiling, focused on an index card that had the word Yes written on it. It's kind of like, you know, you climb the ladder, you see it, and you're completing the circuit in the art that's being made. And some of them were extremely poetic in nature, like this line taken from another index card called Take Water Piece, which simply stated, steal a moon on the water with a bucket. Keep stealing until no moon is seen in the water. This is very beautiful imagery. But she also made a more lighthearted and less cerebral series of instructional DIY cards under the banner of the Do-It-Yourself Flux Fest, which prompted viewers to do things like eat, breathe, and fart at certain times and intervals. So, very interesting person, Yoko Ono.
Yeah.
Usually just kind of relegated to, she broke up the Beatles.
I know.
You know, but she was married to somebody else before John Lennon even had a whole art career, you know, before that.
She was very influential as like a performance artist.
Yeah.
Yep. And she has a hilarious screaming voice, too. I don't know if you've ever heard her.
She came out with an album, like, not too long ago called Yes, I Am a Witch that had a bunch of, like, features from Cat Power and, like, all these very prominent female artists. It was really interesting. Yeah. Very interesting record.
Yeah, very cool. All right, Angela, you have a final question for us for this round?
I do.
Kick us off.
Okay, so... what 90s male frontman performed backup vocals on Tori Amos' track Past the Mission?
I know this one, so I'm going to...
Ooh. Yeah. Now, do you know this naturally?
We
talked. Okay.
We talked about it.
I was going to say, if you know it...
No.
This is the only one I gave away.
I'm sorry, what is the song? Past the
Mission.
90s...
Frontman.
Frontman. So it's you and me, Kyle, on this one.
What do you think, babe?
I don't know. I'm trying to search Frankie's soul right now.
90s frontman, Tori Amos. Do you think maybe Billy Corgan?
You know, I don't know if their distinct relationship. I don't know either. I do know that Billy Corgan has a pretty significant relationship with Courtney Love, who Angela is a big fan of. So that would be a good, I would say that's a good guess just based on that. But do I have any confidence in it as a fact in and of itself? No.
Yeah, me either.
my first thought was like Eddie Vedder, but that's just biased because when you said backup vocals, I was thinking of Temple of the Dog, Chris Cornell.
I see.
You know, so that's
not Eddie Vedder. I'm going to veto that, I guess.
Eddie Vedder and Tori Amos on one track sounds like the most terrible collaboration I can picture.
A lot of vibrato.
Why would you ruin Tori Amos with Eddie Vedder? Like, why would you do that?
You need something in that middle range to even it out.
Correct.
Yeah.
What do you got? Should I give you a hint? I feel like if I give you a
hint. You said 90s front man.
I did say 90s front man. Correct.
Tori Amos.
90s front man.
Yeah, we'll take a hint.
She also wrote a song about him on the album Boys for Pele.
That's my favorite album of hers.
That is called Caught a Light Sneeze. And there is a lyric in the song from the front man's band's first album.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Now I'm trying to think of the Caught a Light.
It's in the chorus.
Oh man.
I've got a new guess. I don't know if this is related to any of that, but this individual just came into my mind. Michael Stipe from REM.
Wouldn't they sound good together?
Wouldn't their voices sound good together?
They would.
wouldn't Tori Amos be down on some fucking REM and like, damn, that's a good line, Michael Stipe. I'll write this song about you. Michael Stipe looks like he could catch a sneeze. He seems like he's very susceptible to catching a sneeze.
I think that's a good guess. I think...
You go in with Michael Stipe.
Versus
Billy Corgan...
I mean, yeah. I could probably...
Is Tori Amos going to dedicate that much of her time to Billy Corgan?
No. I mean, that poor girl.
Should anyone really?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, let's just go with it. I mean, I could probably, like, go down the rabbit hole a little bit more, but why not? Let's do Michael Stipe.
I'm sorry, that's a good guess, but it's incorrect. It's actually Trent Reznor.
Damn it! I would have gotten there. So, I would have fucking gotten there. God damn it.
That makes so much sense.
So Tori Amos and Trent Reznor are rumored to have had a romantic relationship in the 90s. That was broken up, apparently, by Courtney Love.
Ooh.
And on the record, Trent. Boys for Pele, the chorus is caught a light sneeze, dreamed a little dream, made my own pretty hate machine.
Oh, and so
there's a clue there. But you can actually go and watch a live performance where they are singing the song together. They're on the piano and he's singing backup vocals in the chorus. And the song is actually about sexual assault. Mm. Which Tori Amos sings a lot about. But the fact that he like lent, and this is years after they had a relationship. That album is a little later, the one that Past Submission is on. So it's actually really lovely. So that was my question.
I'm getting that vibe, you know, doing the duet. I know the subject matter doesn't match up, but the movie A Mighty Wind, where the lovers that were never allowed to love each other constantly sing
exactly
to each other.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know?
Yeah, that Christopher Guest movie.
Yeah, society would never allow it, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so cool. That's our first round of questions. We're going to take another little break, and then we'll be back with some missed corrections and then more trivia. Get started. It's time for some miscorrections.
Miscorrections.
Ooh, kind of an interesting row, row, row your boat thing going on there. That's okay, you know. First timers, it's fine. It's fine. We have a couple miscorrections here. First, Seth writes in, quote, in your oldest continuously running university question from our last episode 44, where he was a guest. He says, I referenced the Battle of Hastings as taking place in the year 1099. It was actually 1066. I guess he was like looking in a mirror upside down or something when he was recording that information. Also, the song that I was trying to think of in episode 42 was not called I'm Fucking Batman, Bitch. It was called I Whooped Batman's Ass by Wesley Willis. Who you might know as an avant-garde musician in the late 90s, early 2000s. The music software company Nullsoft took their slogan, It Really Whips the Llama's Ass, for their product Winamp, from Willis's song Whip the Llama's Ass. Do you notice the theme here? Dead Kennedys frontman Jello Biafra also compiled Willis's first album's track list. I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes so you can enjoy some of his music. I like it quite a bit. Okay, we're going to get into our second round now. Kyle, you want to kick us off with a, you got a music question, you said?
I do. I have another 90s music question.
What do we got?
Kay Hanley is the lead singer of the band Letters to Cleo. And she found success, you know, with Letters to Cleo. She was in 10 Things I Hate About You with the band. She sang background vocals for a Dropkick Murphys album. But she also went on to write all of the original songs in which Disney TV show?
Ooh. What do you think, Frankie? Got any ideas in your head? I'm not good at Disney.
My era of Disney TV shows is like the Mickey Mouse Club from the 90s.
You said this is the 90s, right?
This is like the
Goof Troop.
The show is recent.
The Goof Troop.
It's not a 90s show.
Oh, okay. It's recent?
Yeah. It's a recent Disney show. Animated show.
Animated.
And she writes all the original material for it.
That's not a Disney show. And that's not her. That's someone else.
This is a tough one.
I'm not good at Disney. I don't have a lot of Disney in my head. What about you, Frankie?
Do you have I don't know. I don't watch Disney anymore.
That was a premium channel growing up.
I know.
It
was premium.
Yeah, but now it's
but
not,
now there's
right?
Netflix.
Right?
Now Style's it's not just like
yeah,
Netflix.
That's true.
Yeah.
I guess I could go back and soak up all that early aughts Disney animated television content.
Oh, man. Disney show. That's
let's see here.
Is there a
Clone
hint?
Wars is animated.
Yeah, can you give us a
hint? I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
It's animated, and it's the main protagonist is a young girl. And she wants to be a doctor when she grows up.
Is That So Raven?
Oh, my God.
Are you serious?
It's not animated.
Yeah. I forgot it was animated. I don't know the plot of That So Raven either.
Man.
So that was just a total shot in the dark. They didn't make a cartoon version?
It's about Raven.
From Teen Titans?
Man, this is hard. I don't know. It's out of my wheelhouse, I feel like. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
What do we got?
Okay, the answer is Doc McStuffins.
Oh,
that's a show?
Yes.
Doc McStuffins? It sounds like you just made that up.
Elliot has seen so much Doc McStuffins, it's
okay,
ridiculous.
Right. I'm not doubting you. I'm just saying, what?
I guess I was thinking about asking the question, like, Kay Hanley is the popular singer-songwriter who wrote all the original music for Doc McStuffins, appeared in the movie 10 Things I Hate About You. What was her band in the 90s? Would you have gotten that immediately?
No, but it might have been slightly easier.
Okay.
I don't know.
This is right my question.
Not
now.
Sure. Not sure.
All of a sudden.
Not sure.
We won't do the theme, though. All right. I have an Italian desserts question for you guys.
Okay.
Italian desserts.
Oh, Angela's
ready.
I'm like, bring it, bitch.
If I don't get this, I'm going to get kicked out. Like,
of Italy.
What Italian dessert is traditionally made of three kinds of ice cream molded into a bar with nuts and fruits layered in?
Okay.
Oh.
Is this...
You can suss amongst yourselves.
I know this, actually.
Oh, okay.
Spumoni?
Yeah.
Say it again?
Spumoni.
Spumoni. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
Is that what you had, Frankie?
Nope. I was like...
What did you have?
It's not Piscotti. It's not.
Oh, Piscotti.
It's not.
You had the right...
I was like...
Intonation?
There's nuts and stuff in that. I don't know.
You had the right rhythm. You had the right rhythm there. Neapolitan ice cream is actually... the Americanized version of Spumoni, the traditional cherry and pistachio flavors being replaced with strawberry and vanilla. And I read also that it was traditionally eaten after a dinner of ravioli. You eat the ravioli and then the Spumoni?
I don't really know about that.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a Wikipedia thing, so who knows?
Yeah.
There was a citation.
Yeah,
there are two total citations on the Spumoni Wikipedia page. So, unresearched topic.
Well, you know, Italian food's very regional.
Mm-hmm.
So, in southern Italy, we don't really eat Spumoni as much as we eat something else. It's like bread with ice cream in it. It's an ice cream sandwich, but it's like almost like a frozen croissant, and it's so good. And that's more like a southern Italian. It's like pane con dolce, something like that. Something like that.
Sounds amazing right now.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's starting to get hot down here in Southwest Florida. Yeah. It's a nice treat, such as that sounds good. Okay, Frankie, you got a question.
Ring of Fire was famously written by...
Johnny Cash?
June Carter.
June Carter.
Ooh,
see, I thought that was really cool. I found that out.
That one made me step back a second, because Johnny Cash performed it.
Yeah. But she wrote it. I always thought that was cool.
Yep.
Yeah, he's not really known for writing stuff that he performs.
Yeah, most of my knowledge comes from the Joaquin Phoenix movie, sadly. You know, I did listen to the big hits when Napster came out. I learned my Johnny Cash through MP3 downloads via Napster. And then the old era came out. And I know we've gone back and forth on this. The covers of Hurt by Nine Inch Nails. We're in agreement on that, right? It's trash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pure trash.
Yeah.
If you like that song, really go listen to it.
Really listen to it. And you know what? So Lee and I had, there's a firestorm of a thread on my Facebook page from like a year ago over me just saying like, this is the worst thing Trent Reznor ever did was letting him cover that song. And I want to correct something really quick.
Okay.
So the reason I posted that was not because I hate the cover, which I don't like it very much. But the reason I did
that
is because people think that Johnny Cash wrote that song similar to what happened with June Carter and Ring of Fire. Because he was the performer and people have popularized that version. They think it's his song, and I want to burn down buildings over it because I love Trent Reznor so much. So I hate that he doesn't get the cred.
Didn't Trent Reznor just kind of roll over on that, too, and say, like, the song's his now or something like that?
Yeah, well, just something that was just, like, he's so prolific, and for someone like that to want to sing my song and yada yada, which is cool. I respect you, Trent, whatever. But we all have our opinions.
Yeah.
So.
Trent, we're questioning your decisions today. Not all of them, but they're under examination.
We're cool with that Pass the Mission thing, but the Johnny Cash stuff.
All right, my next question for you guys has to deal with African folklore. African folklore is the category. This might be the hardest one that I have for you guys, but maybe you know it. Maybe you know it. In African folklore, Anansi, who tried to hoard all of the world's wisdom before spilling it into the river for all to have, typically takes the form of what kind of creature?
I know this. I really do, because I believe it's a spider.
I don't know. I mean, that makes sense, actually.
I believe it's a spider. Have you guys seen American Gods?
I have not seen it.
You haven't?
I read the book.
Okay, he appears in the book. Anansi does appear in that book, and he appears in the show.
As a spider.
As a spider.
Yes, that's right. Okay. It is a spider. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, I like that story.
Yeah, there are actually several interesting stories about Anansi in the Akan folklore. He is often portrayed as a clever trickster, mainly, but also serves other mythological roles, such as the keeper of all the world's stories and the assistant of Nayami, the sky god. And if you're looking for a modern interpretation, check out American Gods, as Angela just suggested, or the comic book Isnana the Were-Spider by Haitian-born Brooklyn comic book writer Greg Anderson Elisei. That's how you pronounce his name, I think. Check it out. Very good comic. So that's my second question. Angela, do you have a question?
I do have a question.
You got a question? I'm ready. We're ready.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
So how old was Distillers frontwoman Brody Dale when she started dating Tim Armstrong, the lead singer of Rancid?
I want to say like 16 or 17. It's like gross. I remember hearing about this and thinking like, fuck that guy.
How old is she? She's not like 95 years old. I was thinking older, actually. I was thinking like in her early 70s, maybe, when they started.
She's actually 526. She's a mythic elf being.
Gotcha. That's why the name Brody. It's like one of those older names.
Yeah. And she's from Australia, so clearly.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. It's probably younger. I don't know for sure. So
I think it was like 16, and he was like late 20s or something? Maybe Frankie, younger, actually. Ideas? Was she like maybe 15?
I'm going to say 18, just because that's like, you know, just a good...
Because you want it to be 18.
Because I want it to be. I'm just going to say 18.
At least 18.
What's the Franco factor here is what I want to know. is this
like
within the window?
I feel like if I tell you that,
no,
I know. You're going to get it.
Yeah.
So clearly,
let's
I
meet
just
in the
gave
middle.
It away here.
16.
I'm going to go 18.
Let's meet in the middle, 17. Unless somebody has really strong opinions about their age. Do you feel like it's younger?
I feel like it might be younger, but I could be thinking of somebody completely different. I don't know.
I'm basically reminded right now, this is like the opposite of those terrible morning rock shows that I listened to when I was a kid, where they would have countdown timers to when the Olsen twins were going to turn 18. Ugh, this is like the opposite of that.
Oh my God.
You know?
Yeah. Oh my God. I remember that. And just being like, what?
It was like seriously every single radio station.
It was just,
pretty gross.
Barf.
Yeah. They were all hosted by Tim Armstrong, who, let's go with 17. Me in the middle. Unless you have a strong opinion about it.
I don't know why, but for some reason I was like 23.
You don't want to throw him under the bus.
Just guessing,
but I can just tell by this question. He's a creep. He's a creep. It's younger than 18.
Yeah.
I can just tell.
Yeah.
Let's go 17.
Man. Yikes.
What's the answer?
She is 16.
Motherfuckers.
Should have listened to Kyle.
So I do believe that they met prior to that. Mm-hmm. And she had a band called Sourpuss in Australia. And she was on festivals and stuff like that. And I think they met at a festival and she was like 15. And then Rancid would come back to Australia. And I think right around 16 is when they started dating. And then when she turned 18, he moved her to LA. She bought herself a ticket and came to Los Angeles and they got married. And partially because so she could stay.
This is the Ted Nugent model.
Yeah, essentially. So, but yeah, he was... you know, older than her, 20 in his 20s mm-hmm. by then. And we're talking about Rancid, like, during Ruby Soho era. Like,
right.
We're talking about, like, when they were on MTV and
the
whatever.
Punk band Rancid, in case anybody's listening has no idea what the hell we're talking about here.
So,
they were very popular for a time, and they're still very popular,
I would say that they are. I think you can't buy a Tony Hawk game without hearing a Rancid song. I mean, it's like they were, like, the forerunners of L.A., punk in the 90s and the Distillers were, you know, kind of like the partnership to that. It's like I hate to say this, but the Kurt and Courtney kind of Sid and Nancy, like whatever.
Yeah.
But except they have bands.
Lots of patterns in that kind of stuff. You know, like I said, it's the Ted Nugent model. That's exactly what Ted Nugent did.
Yeah.
You know, he basically like kidnapped this woman.
I mean, Brody had emancipated herself as a teenager.
Right.
So she was
So
she was like in control of her own life. It's like she has a very interesting story. So she made the choice to come to Los Angeles, but he did start dating her at a young age. And because of that, she got all these like Lolita comments about her early on that, she was some like seductress who put a spell on Tim Armstrong that she could move to the United States and start a band. And just
also like Marilyn Manson and from Westworld, Rachel Evan Wood, you know,
Evan
that
Rachel
was, Evan Rachel Wood. I always flip that for some reason. But yeah, that was, I think, post his relationship with Dita Von Teese.
Yeah.
And she was very young, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember how young she was. I know she was at least 18, though.
I think why I'm remembering that, I think she was 18, but I think like there was a music video of his that she was where she was wearing heart-shaped glasses, and so the comparisons were drawn.
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize that was her. Now that I'm thinking back to that music, do you remember what the music video was?
Heart-shaped glasses.
Yes, that is the name of the song.
Oh, nice.
That's right about when I stopped listening to Manson pretty seriously. You know, before that, I would listen to like the entire album all the way through.
Really?
Why?
Yeah.
Big Manson fan.
Yeah. Antichrist Superstar. Great album.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
Mechanical Animals.
Who are you?
The Golden Age of Grotesque. So my next question for you guys, and final question of this round, is a question about a mnemonic device, you know, that you might use to help you remember something. So you might want to take notes on this phrase. The phrase, I value xylophones like cows dig milk. I value xylophones like cows dig milk is a mnemonic device used to help remember what? What is that commonly used to help remember? I value xylophones like cows dig milk.
I actually know this.
You know it because you just sussed it out inside your head, or do you know because you read the...
I know it because I went to evangelical Christian school for 6 years.
Ooh, oh, okay.
Oh, okay. This is sussable then. This is sussable.
All right. So give it to us, Kyle. Like, I don't know.
It's Roman numerals. Yeah, I don't either.
That's right. Yep. IVX.
Oh, I see.
LCDM. Those are all the Roman numerals that you could use. That's very good. Now, some guy who got it wrong last night at Nice Guys Trivia was like, man, I even have the Roman numerals tattooed on my arm in order. And after he showed me, I told him he needs to get I value xylophones like cows dig milk tattooed on the other arm to help him remember, you know. So very good, Kyle. Very good.
Yeah, at ECS, we didn't learn, you know, complicated math things. We learned Roman numerals. We didn't learn about Lewis and Clark. We learned about Billy Graham.
You know what, though?
Yeah.
I would much rather have that Roman numeral knowledge for trivia, because that is always a thorn in my side. Anyways, we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with our final question round. We're back from our short break, and we're going to get into our final rounds here in a second. But first, let me just say thanks again, guys, for coming on the podcast. It's been lovely having you as guests. We'll be sure to get some plugs in before we sign off so everybody can check out your bands. You got a final question for us?
I do.
What do we got?
All right. I didn't know this when I read this fact, but maybe this is like common knowledge and I'm just a big old dummy. But anyway, on Alanis Morissette's hit, You Oughta Know, it featured Dave Navarro on guitar, who famously played bass on that song.
You know what's funny? I know who played drums, but not bass.
It's Taylor from the Foo Fighters, right?
Correct. Yes.
But that's not drummer. Who played bass, yeah.
No.
It was Taylor from the Foo Fighters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We watched that documentary.
The drummer. Yep. Right?
We mentioned the documentary in the last episode, too. So go check out the show notes for that back and forth, the great Foo Fighters documentary. But who played bass?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, maybe it's Navarro was running with the Red Hot Chili Peppers at the time. Maybe it's Flea.
Yeah. Oh, that's honestly where my mind was going.
Yeah.
That's probably the best guess in terms of proximity.
Right.
Because that would be right around that time.
The bass on that song fucking rules. I'm thinking about it right now. It's like boop, 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 boop.
That's
true. He's like dancing around that thing.
It is.
Who could dance like Flea?
It's a bit more funky than your typical 90s alternative bass line.
Just right before the verse starts again, out of the chorus, there's like a little bass like doo, 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 doo.
That's true. I'm going to put my hat in that ring. I'm going to go
yes.
with Flea as well. I'm going to join up.
Flea is so good that he could teach a gorilla how to play bass. Coco, the gorilla, he taught how to play bass.
Wow.
He is at least as good to play on You Oughta Know by Alanis Morissette. Flea.
That's your final answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think so.
The correct answer is Flea.
You had me for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had me
such
for a second.
Such a good guess, Lee. Yeah. Seriously. That
was great. Yeah.
Line of proximity.
Do you know
either?
Who she wrote that song about?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
It's Dave Coulier, right?
Right.
From Full House?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Which is a very strange thing to picture in your mind. But
I know.
But
he is from Canada.
Yeah. And he can't be, I mean, I'm sure she's goofier than she lets on in that song. And I'm sure he's more serious than,
Have you ever seen the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode about it?
No.
It's great.
I mean, maybe I have,
she secretly tells Larry David who the song's about before anyone knows, and then he tells everyone and she gets super mad.
That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. It's really, really good.
Gotta watch that one.
It's great.
Gotta watch that one. Cool. All right, Frankie, you got a final question for us?
Let's see. I'm gonna go, I don't know. Simple. I wish I had more complicated questions, to be totally honest, but King Henry had how many wives? Just like random. I just know random history.
Henry the Eighth.
King Henry the Eighth.
This is a famous fact that I don't know for certain off the top of my
Actually,
head.
Actually, I don't know off the top of my head either.
Okay, we might need to suss here.
Okay, I think it might be
single digit, right?
Yes, it's
single digit.
Yeah, I think it's like five. Well, there's Henry VIII. So what? We have Anne Boleyn.
Mm-hmm.
We have the sister, Boleyn. The other sister. Is it Mary Boleyn and Anne Boleyn?
I like that, but you know, a lady, you can actually know these names and are counting them.
I'm
like,
looking
whoa.
At her like, sure, yes, mm-hmm. But I don't know.
You guys have never read The Other Boleyn Girl by Philippa Gregory? What?
No.
So, yeah. So
would you recommend it?
It's like historical fiction, but also like a bodice ripper at the same time.
Okay.
So it's like you get that history, but also that like smut if you're into that. So.
I'll probably skip it.
Yeah. I know. I
want to like call up, maybe start a band called Bodice Ripper.
That's a fucking great idea. Yeah. Are you and Frankie?
Yes, I'm down. Taking, yeah, let's do it. The three of us.
Okay. I've been playing drums lately. I still suck.
Wow, the birth of Bodice Ripper right here.
Here, I want to play the triangle. Can I please play the triangle?
Yes.
And xylophone. I mean, just like one lead on xylophone. Possibly.
It sounds like Depeche Mode, just like all percussion.
I was listening
Anyways, we don't want to throw you off. You were doing good.
Okay,
counting
yeah,
up these
five,
wives.
Yeah, maybe five.
So there was Anne Boleyn, who I think was the sister of his original wife. And he was like, oh, you're not, but your sister's way hotter or something. So it was like Mary Boleyn and Anne Boleyn, I think. And then but there was also like
A bunch of others
before them. And I want to say it was like, geez, there's so many.
I don't know. I'm going to go with five because I don't know.
I think five is probably a good guess. I think it might. There is a chance that it might be more.
That's what I'm thinking. So you said Henry VIII, right?
Yeah.
Eight wives, one for every ancestor.
I kind of think he did have eight wives.
It's possible.
People did crazy shit like that back in the day. Like, sure. I'm the eighth one. I need
he
eight
wives.
He was
definitely crazy. Yeah. He was. Yeah.
But
and probably syphilitic.
Eight seems a little high, though. I don't know why. I'm feeling like, as Anthony Fantano would say, a strong six to light seven on this.
I have very little confidence in my answer on this. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I'm defaulting confidence to Kyle because she seems to know the most about it. And you did get Brody's age right before, and I don't want to make the same goof. So five is five. What we're
doing? Is five the final
Kyle
answer?
We're just gonna let you give the final.
We're gonna go with five.
Okay. Super close, but it's six.
Six wives.
It was six.
Six. Okay.
And he was married to Catherine. Broke away from the church when he wanted to marry Anne Boleyn. So he never actually married Mary.
Oh,
they just like got their fuck on, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, pardon me. But that's like, yeah. And then he had like a bunch of other wives and just like, you know, did nice things, like beheaded them, which is really crazy.
Yeah.
I'm really glad we don't live in that time period anymore.
Oh, all grateful. The time I think about how lucky we are to not have to like go and do basic survival stuff every day, you know, on the daily.
Air conditioning is just nice, basically.
It is.
We got social media. Good question. Good question, Frankie.
Yeah. I don't want stuff like that.
I want the director of The Favorite to make a movie about Henry VIII. Have you guys seen The Favorite?
No.
It's so good.
It was way better than I expected. It's like a period drama with Emma Stone and Olivia
Coleman and Rachel Weisz.
Yes.
And also Nicholas Holt. Mm-hmm. And some other white dudes that we don't care about.
It's like a dark comedy, but it's I was like, this is too stylistic. A lot of it shot with wide angle lenses and stuff, but it warmed up to me.
It is more than just a period piece.
Yeah.
It's not just a period piece.
It's like There Will Be Blood, but in Queen Annian times.
I've been wanting to see it. I would literally just watch it for the costumes.
My mom does that.
I know. That's, I'm like, I did see the trailer for that one, so.
Yeah, no,
it's good.
Highly recommend.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
It'll rip. It's like I was like going into it like, oh, this is gonna be really good. He's a good director, and I saw The Last Year before, which like destroyed me, and then this movie also destroyed me. So yeah, prepare to be destroyed in a good way. You should watch it.
Cool.
All right, so Angela, you got a final question?
I do have a final question. This is a name three.
Okay.
So I will give a preliminary hint and say that there are approximately about 10 potential answers to this, but you only need to name three.
Whoa.
Okay. So Name three songs from the 90s or early 2000s that are rumored to be about Courtney Love. I had to do a Courtney Love question, obviously. But this one is kind of fun. I don't know if you can come up with any.
Wow.
There's quite a few, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Tracks 1 through 10 on In Utero.
Heart-shaped box.
That's not true.
Heart-shaped box, for sure.
That's one of them, yeah. Think broader than that. Think about her surroundings, the people she surrounds herself with. I talked about a couple of them earlier in the episode.
Oh, really?
That's another hint.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I guess Trent Reznor probably wrote a song. Trent Reznor song do you think?
Deeper on what that song might be.
Hmm.
Late Pretty 90s. Hate Machine.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Pretty Hate Machine, do you think?
That's an album.
That's too early.
And yeah, that's 89, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
The release date of Pretty Hate Machine. Some good rapping at the end of that album.
It's a very interesting piece. It's a
little out of character, but it's 89.
It's just, experiments were being made. I know there's like so many.
There's quite a few.
Yeah, and I'm just blanking.
Could it be The Perfect Drug? Off of the Lost Highway soundtrack, or
it's a great song.
Yeah, could that be about her? You are the perfect drug.
You really think he liked her that much?
I don't know. Who knows? I can't get in that guy's head. I don't want to get in that guy's head. Read his lyrics. Not a good place to be.
We actually talked about a few of them.
I was gonna say
in this episode
of Nine Inch Nails songs.
No, a few different artists who wrote.
Right,
songs
so
about.
There's you mentioned a couple Tori Amos songs.
I did.
So maybe a Tori Amos.
Cornflower Girl? Cornflake
Girl.
Cornflake Girl. See, I don't want to say Cornflake Girl and sound like an idiot.
It's a very direct, the title of the song is a very direct attack, and it's on Boys for Pele.
Okay, so that's the second one then.
That's one of them.
Yes.
Tori Amos wrote a song. Boys for Pele. So there's Marianne, that's not about Courtney Love. Blood Roses isn't on that album.
Oh.
Shit.
It is.
Oh.
It is.
What is it?
Well, we were just talking about the Foo Fighters. Obviously, Dave Grohl has some stuff to say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Bad Actors.
That's one of them, yes.
Okay.
That's one of the 10.
Bad Actors by the Foo
Fighters.
There's
more than one Foo Fighters song, but Bad Actors is one of them. So you guys have got two so far. Heart-Shaped Box, I'll count it, even though it's an Nirvana song. and the Foo Fighters.
What about Cornflake Girl?
Cornflake Girl, that's not the one.
Oh, no?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
That's not the one.
This is when I'm really regretting not listening to more Tori Amos right now.
There's more. There's
my greatest flaw.
Other people, too.
My brother is a huge fan of Tori Amos. I bought him a bunch of CDs for Christmas, but I never sent them. They're sitting on my shelf in the other room right
listen
now.
Listen to them.
I know. Probably. I could go listen to them right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ty. Also, Merry Christmas. I'll get those to you soon.
Did R.E.M. write any songs about Courtney Love?
I don't know. There's a bird singing. Frankie, any ideas?
No.
No?
Mm-mm. Not really. Well, she told me the Tori Amos one, so I can't.
I want Cornflake Girl to be about Courtney Love bad right now.
It's not. Lee.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Probably about Tori herself.
Yeah. What about Billy Corgan?
Oh, that's okay. Let's think. He definitely did.
I could see him writing Disarm. About Courtney Love, like I'm sending you a smile from all the way over here.
That's not the song, but there is a Smashing Pumpkins song that there's actually several. There's like a few that are rumored to be about her. There's one that's very specific. That her last name is in.
Oh, Stand Inside Your Love.
No.
Oh.
This is close. Close.
Is it on that album? Is that Machina?
No, it's earlier than that.
Is it on a door?
No, earlier.
Is it on Melancholy? And it has love?
All of them. The title doesn't have love in it. The lyrics do. There's three on Melancholy that are about her, apparently, according to Billy Corgan.
That album was crazy when I first heard it.
And me too, same. It's like the record that made me like the Smashing Pumpkins, because I didn't like them before that. Guesses? You guys got 2 out of 3. That's pretty dang good.
I don't think Bullet with Butterfly Wings has love in it.
I don't think so either. What about Tonight?
Zero? Tonight?
I don't know, man. I'm just naming songs from the album. But
it's, that one is very warm. That is a warm song. Like,
it is.
That's got feels all over it, that song.
It does.
Believe in me because I believe in you. Mm-hmm. Fuck, I tear up.
We'll crucify the insincere. Yeah.
Is it Tonight?
That's actually one of them.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
There's three. So I'm going to go through a few of these because there's quite a few. So there's three on Melancholy, where boys fear to tread is about Courtney Love, apparently. The song Bodies, which has the chorus, this is kind of fucked up, but the chorus.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Bodies hit the floor.
But it's the chorus lyric is love is suicide. Love is suicide. Oh. So that's rough. Bodies. Tonight is also lightly rumored. So Corgan has never confirmed that, but that is a rumor, yes. So I'm going to count that one. The Nine Inch Nails one is Starfuckers, which is like think about it, like he breaks all their heads in the video. So it's likely about Corgan, all of them, Stipe, her, Love, you know, all of them.
Yeah.
And this is a really funny one.
The Carly Simon reference on that, too, that song.
Yeah, You're So Vain. Mm-hmm. I bet you think the song is about you.
Yeah.
It covered that.
I went over that song in my head for the answer, and I said, no, that's about Carly Simon. the neuron misfired
Yes, definitely a misfire, but definitely Starfuckers.
Yeah.
That's. I think that's pretty clear, I want to say. The Tori Amos song is called Professional Widow. Which is, heart attack.
Yeah.
And there's a lyric in the song that says, give me love, give me peace, and a hard cock. That's how she ends the song.
Wow.
It's like, gonna strike up a deal, make him feel like a congressman. It's running in the family. Yeah, it's like her dad, Courtney Love's dad, was a music guy. She's on the back of Animoxamia. There's like a Grateful Dead family photo, and she's like 4 years old on the back of it.
Wow. She's so like a Barrymore in music.
Yeah, there is, and that's why they were friends.
I see.
Courtney and Drew. They had like history together. They were at like LA parties in the 80s together when they were kids. This is like, that's weird. I know it's too much about her. It's dumb. Here's another one. This one's funny and random. There's a Gwen Stefani song about her. Holla Back Girl is rumored to be about Courtney Love. A few times you've been around that block. It's not just gonna, I guess, like something about Gavin Rossdale. Probably. Also, another Foo Fighters song, I'll Stick Around. That one is apparently about her as well.
That's an earlier song
of
theirs.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. It's the first.
The Color and the Shape? Is that the?
I think it's the first.
Or Foo Fighters is self-titled. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the one right after. There's a Stone Temple Pilots song, Too Cool Queenie. That one's also rumored to be about her. I think that's all I have on here. But there's quite a few. It's the coolest thing in the world to me, because like how much of a bad bitch do you have to be to have like 12 or 15 people write songs about you? Like, I don't know. I just think that's kind of rad. Like, whatever, you know, people think, whatever. I just think that's hilarious.
We got to put together a playlist,
for
this episode or something songs. Cool. Let's do that.
I will.
Right on. Okay. Cool. I have my final question for you guys is related to pinball, which I selected because, you know, your events, Tough Thursdays at Nice Guys, they have pinball machines there. So not only can you come out and check out a good show, Kylan, I think you're playing the next one, right?
I am. Not next week, but the week after. And I'm actually going to be joined.
What's the date on that?
May 30th.
May 30th.
May 30th.
Okay, cool. And is there another performer, too, that night? Or?
Yeah, Emerald Vision is playing.
Oh, dope. That is going to be so sick.
Yeah.
I'm stoked.
They're our own local prog rock band.
Yeah.
But don't get it fooled in your head. It's not a bunch of, like, nothing against 50-year-old guys in prog rock bands, but these are young, passionate utes.
They're like 20.
yeah. Love shredding.
They're like such babies. But their songs, like they have such amazing instincts.
Yeah.
They're just so cool. And I'm going to be joined by my guitarist, Doug Smith. So it's going to be really fun.
Yeah. He plays with Mark, too, sometimes.
He does.
So it's a whole little happy family we have down here in Southwest Florida. The pinball question I have for you guys, first released in 1992 and selling over 20,000 units, what movie-licensed pinball machine is the best-selling pinball machine of all time?
Movie-licensed.
Yep. And it was released in 1992. That would be the machine. I'm not sure about the movie it's based on, but the machine came out in 92.
For some reason, I wanted to say the Terminator.
That's a good one.
That is a good
suggestion. I wanted to say the Terminator.
I feel like I always saw Terminator pinball machines. Or like Ghostbusters, maybe?
Ghostbusters. I think the first one was like made in like the late 80s.
Yeah.
So
but
I'm not 100%. Watch me be on like missed corrections. I'm going to cry.
Trust me, I cry all the time. Yeah. we had one listener that wrote in and said that they sing that theme to people in real life when they fuck up. They just attack them with the music.
That's great.
I listened
to that episode, and apparently it's like an inside joke, and people are like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Shout out to our Australian audience, by the way. They were Australian.
Oh, awesome.
And we do have it. That's our second largest listening country outside of the United States. So really, shout out to our 6.5% of downloads that come from Australia.
Actually, The Young Dead also has some listens in Australia.
You know what that tells me? Australia's got good taste.
They really do. That tells me. Sure. There's some really good music coming out of Australia. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yep. Yeah. But what pinball machine is the best-selling pinball machine of all time?
I like Terminator.
I do like Terminator, but I'm also like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that one came out in the late 80s, too.
No, the first one, this Terminator 2, Judgment Day, is the 90s, for sure. Yeah. Because Eddie Furlong.
Is it a first movie? Or a sequel? I mean, is there... I'm always asking for hints.
I can't give you that level of hint for this.
Okay. Fine. What about, is it, like... you don't have to tell us if it's a sequel, but is it like a part of like a trilogy or something?
There are multiple movies in the series, but as far as I know, there's only one pinball machine.
Oh my gosh. Okay. My mind's going. I'm like, aliens.
Right? Alien or like, and Terminator would still, I mean, it has to be like a franchise type thing, whatever.
Because I hate that you asked for that hint.
There's a pinball machine.
I'm so sorry. I'm going with Terminator.
Terminator's a great guess.
I think that's a good guess, too.
I feel good about Terminator.
I feel like he freaked out a little when we said Alien, though.
It's because he likes Alien so much.
Yeah, that's true.
The first Alien came out in, like, 70s.
That's right.
That's right, mm-hmm. late 70s. So, no, I don't think it is Alien. I feel like it's got to be...
That's true. Maybe not. Maybe Terminator is the right go, and I'm second-guessing. I'm going to go with Terminator as well. If you guys are on Terminator, I'm on Terminator.
I feel good about Terminator.
I can either give you guys the correct answer, or I can let you continue to guess and let you know it's none of the
ones that
you've said so far.
Damn. Yes. All right, cool. All right.
If you want just another second.
None of the guessing. Okay.
Pinball. Most
92.
Yep.
92?
All time.
Mm-hmm.
What movie came out in the early 90s?
You've mentioned Terminator, Ghostbusters, Alien, none of those.
Ghostbusters. Okay. Well, let me think of like other... I'm trying to think of Nice Guys and the pinball machines at Nice Guys.
I don't know if it's still there, but they have had this machine there.
Oh, okay.
So it can't be Game of Thrones that came out in 92.
They had an X-Files machine.
What did X-Files come out? Wait, but you said movie. Oh, but it was a movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, movie.
Oh, movie. Okay.
92 is a little early for X-Files movie.
I'm thinking of what they had. And obviously it's not Game of Thrones because they had that one, but it's not that one.
Is it action?
That's a great machine, by the name.
I keep asking for hints. I'm terrible.
The movie? You want the genre?
I want, yeah, kind of. Ooh, is it a horror film? Oh my gosh, I'm getting excited. What am I doing?
It has elements of action, comedy, horror. The movie that I'm talking about is The Addams Family.
Oh my God. You know what?
I think it did come out in 92. Or 91.
Addams Family.
Right.
Somewhere. I don't have the release date for the movie up here, but the machine came out in 92. Actors Raul Julia and... Is it Angelica Huston or Houston?
Houston.
Yeah. My bad.
She's so great.
Angelica Huston recorded custom voiceovers for the game. Christopher Lloyd appears as Uncle Fester, but he was removed from the digital version of the game due to licensing. So apparently Christopher Lloyd was like, if you want me to sign this contract, you know, you have to pay me a certain amount of money to put my face in the digital version. And they just took Christopher Lloyd out. Wow. Which to me is not the same game. Not the same game. Yeah. He features prominently. Wednesday and Pugsley appear in the 1994 special edition version of the game in a trap door element. They like pop up out of the board. So,
Oh, that's cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I didn't know that before I was doing my research this week that the Addams Family are the most popular, highest selling pinball machine of all time.
That's cool. Wow. Yeah. That's great.
Did not know that.
Cool. Frankie, Angela, Kyle, thank you for joining me on the show.
You're welcome.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what you guys got going on in general, where people can find you online, events that they can come to. And
every Tuesday we're doing the live shows. We're doing the Talking Tough live show, 7:30. It's always right on time. You can tune into the personal Facebook page. You can also find us on Facebook, Talking Tough with Frankie and Angela. So go like our page. And that's really fun. So we got the live show. And then we have Tough Thursdays.
Tough Thursdays is a monthly original live music showcase that we do at Nice Guys one Thursday a month. And so that has rotating performers, and we always try to showcase local original music. We're planning on bringing some regional acts in the coming months, too, you know, from different cities in Florida, you know. So, and
anybody you can talk about right now?
No, not really, because we don't have our plans laid out, but I do have some ideas of who I'd like to bring, but I don't have anything in the
works. Yeah.
So it's just
something. In that middle territory
exactly.
right now.
Exactly. And both of these are sponsored by a local company called Sexy Shoes. So, yeah.
Cool.
And we were doing Songwriter Sunday brunch, but we just ended that for the summer.
Okay.
It's too hot out, but that was a really...
But if you're listening maybe next year in the spring or something.
Well, yes, in October that will be back at Remedies.
Great.
Well, and Angela's got some stuff coming up with LYR. So.
Right. So in the end of May, May 24th and May 25th, that is the 4th annual Babe Fest.
Woo-hoo.
May 24th in Fort Myers at Howl Tattoo and Piercing, featuring bands from all over Florida, including Bite Marks from Gainesville and my band, The Young Dead. And then in May 25th in Tampa features Chastity Belt from Seattle, beloved sub pop band. And lots of great regional bands. This is a diversity first music festival, so we feature diverse lineups prominently throughout both dates. Vendors, food, should be a great time. So
can't wait.
Ticket prices are low, so go
for now.
Right, there's no excuse not to go.
Cool. Yeah, check that out. That's do you have BabeFest website for that?
I do. Loverebellion.org. You can find tickets on that website. You can also find us on Facebook / Love Your Rebellion and, of course, Instagram @ Love Your Rebellion. So all those places, there's ticket links for both shows.
Great. And then any music-related things you want to plug, accounts online?
Every Wednesday, I host the open mic night at Whiskey Park, 8 to 11. That's free. And then every Friday, Zid and I, half of Cobras, are at Old Soul every Friday, 8 o'clock. So that's free, 21 plus.
Cool. All right. So we'll put links to all that stuff in the show notes.
Cool.
So if you're listening, go look at that and, you know, we'll add Facebook events and other various websites so you don't have to remember. But please do check those out. Kyle, anything you want to plug in particular?
You can follow me on Instagram, Hot Damn Kyle Ann. Check out my music on Spotify, Kyle Ann, Ann with an E.
Great. All right. That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. You can catch me hosting No Nonsense Trivia live on Mondays at Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers at 7:30. Then again on Wednesdays at Bury Me Brewing, also in Fort Myers. That one's starting at 7. And each and every Thursday evening at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in downtown Cape Coral. That show's starting at 7:30. Mark Davis will be returning next week, so join in for his welcome return on the podcast. He will also be at Nice Guys Pizza on Wednesday, his return to trivia there I covered this week. Thanks for listening. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No by sharing our podcast on your social media accounts. You could also leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the podcast directly on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. Thank you to our supporters on Patreon for helping us out with the show. Thank you to our quiz daddies, Tommy from the Electric Mud and Tim from San Diego, member of the trivia team Pat's Garden Service. Thanks to our team captains, Kristen and Fletcher. Also, special thanks to our friend Elise, a proverbial lightkeeper who we inadvertently demoted to the Rumpelstiltskin tier in the last episode. She is a proverbial lightkeeper. Thanks also to our other proverbial lightkeepers, Aaron, Sarah, Brina, Carly, Christopher, Josh, Max, Lucas, Sean, Sherry, and Gil. Big thanks also to our Rumpelstiltskins, Michael C. and Michael J. If you'd like to support the podcast, go to thenono.com, click support. You'll get access to all the bonus content that we have up immediately. You can also write us with a Rate My Question or a miscorrection at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at No Nonsense Trivia. We also have a Facebook group you can join as well to chat with other listeners and us. And finally, once again, don't forget to leave us a rating. It's so important. Just rate this show 5 stars if you can. And of course, call us. Leave us a message. We'd love to hear your beautiful voices on our call-in line that I lost in my notes here. Where is it? Oh, no. Here it is. 9293-NO-NO. How could I forget that? I made it a word, so it's easy to remember. 9293-NO-NO. That's 929-356-6966. That's all of our business for this week. Join us again for more trivia next week. Have a good one.